Good morning, everybody. It's Jesse Ziegler and Quinn Cody at the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show, co-presented by Moto Minded and Rally Navigator. We're lumping those guys in.
Yeah. They kind of go hand in hand anyway. So
absolutely. Might as
well keep both those guys together.
If there's two things you need to check out, it's Moto Minded, Rally Navigator. They go together. And then you need to get some climb gear to wear while you're using those cool tools.
Yeah.
To go out and have an awesome experience.
That's right. Throw on your giant loot bags.
That's what we're doing. And if you don't want to be like us, you might as well stop listening, because you're about to get a whole bunch of Jesse and Quinn in today's show. We have some analysis on the day. We got some terrible predictions. We get to annoy each other with how bad we've been so far this year predicting things.
I think I've been better than you, but...
See, we're already annoying each other.
We're used to this.
We're sick of each other, too. We've been around each other every morning for 2 weeks. Yeah. We got one more day to go.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little more upbeat today because we only have one more day, and it's like you can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
There it is. I see it.
Yeah.
I see my morning coming back to me.
Looking forward to Saturday.
Saturday's going to be great. I'm sleeping in.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to wake up at 4:30 anyway, just because my body's trained now.
You're stuck in that momentum. Yeah.
Maybe I'll sleep till 6 and then my kids will jump on me and wake me up.
Oh, boy.
But that's all right.
That's going to happen. That is all right.
It's better than
hanging out with me in the morning.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, today's decisive stage in the race, I think, is safe to say. It may have set our overall standings in stone. There was a lot at stake today, for sure. There were some guys that started today in an unfavorable position, to put it lightly. And then a lot of people had trouble today, which sort of emphasized those starting positions and really put them down in a hole.
Yeah, I would say that we probably set the overall winner in stone, but we're very, very, very tight for the podium spots going into tomorrow.
Yep. Toby Price had the lead today after his stage win, and Adrian Van Beveren started in fourth after some games were played and some people pulled off to the side of the track or quote-unquote got lost and missed a waypoint, navigation trouble. Johan Barreda started in third today. And Luciano Benavides started in second. And all of those guys lost significant time today in the special. Not just typically from leading out and having a tough time letting people catch you, but it was a beast of a stage.
What happened today?
Adrian Van Beveren lost a lot of time today.
Yes.
And took himself essentially out of contention for the win.
Yes. And... kind of some interesting information that we didn't really talk about or consider yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
New rule this year is that riders can be re-entered into the race after they drop out.
Right, whether it be crashing out or mechanical DNF.
Yep, and we saw Kevin Benavides drop out of the race yesterday,
mm-hmm.
then re-enter today starting in 39th position and come out and win the stage.
He did. He came out swinging, had a lot of tracks in front of him, and he really put the hammer down. He was probably riding kind of angry.
Yeah, I imagine he's a little irritated.
Yeah, that his overall Dakar hopes and dreams were over. But
he did what he's there to do, which is to go out and win and then be able to support his team. And he won by just 4 seconds over Sam Sunderland.
Which is crazy if you think that the stage was over 3.5 hours long.
Yeah. And
4 seconds.
That was really actually very beneficial for Sunderland, because now Sunderland is the overall leader of the rally.
Yes, he is.
And he doesn't have to lead out the final stage tomorrow. So he has a teammate to go in front of him and open the track, which is a big benefit. And I'm sure it takes a little bit of stress off his mind.
It does, for sure. He's leading the overall rally by a pretty big margin, according to this year's rally. I mean, he's 6 minutes and 52 seconds in front of Pablo Quintanilla after the day. And that's that used to cover the top five guys, if you remember a couple days ago. These time gaps kind of opened up today a little bit. They're still under 10 minutes for the podium, but it's bigger than it was before.
Yeah. Well, and we'll go over the general here in a little bit.
I know. I keep jumping over there.
Work our way down the stage standings for the day.
Like you said, Kevin jumped out. He was 33rd starter. That's where they drop him in after his re-entry into the race. And by this first waypoint, I think he was in first or second place, and he never let off. And he ended up, you know, taking the stage by 4 seconds over his family teammate on the gas, Sam Sunderland. Sunderland started 17th today, and again, by the first waypoint, he was in second place.
Yep.
You know, he missed some of the pitfalls that threw people up, stuck to his road book, and, you know, came in second place. Joaquim Rodriguez, J-Rod on the Hero, third on the day.
Yeah.
Really great ride from him.
Awesome ride for Joaquim. I mean, he's a, you know, solid rider. And, you know, we saw him struggle a little bit after his big stage win. So it's good to see him back up there kind of mixing it up with the big boys.
Yeah, that crash that he suffered seems to be, the effects of that are wearing off a little bit. And now he's putting the hammer down again. He started in 31st. Again, what you're seeing here is the people that started 10th and back really had an advantage because, like we said, there was some chaos out there.
Yeah. You know, and what it looks like is right at the beginning of the stage, I think just 4 kilometers in, there was a tricky waypoint, and it looks like it tripped up a lot of guys right off the bat.
Yeah. You can even see, if you look at the live tracking, you can see Toby Price turn around off the main course, come back to where there must have been a waypoint that he needed to hit, turn around and come again. I mean, he went from first, and then in 40 Ks where the first checkpoint was, he was in 43rd place virtually.
Well,
so he lost some time.
You know, that, and it makes me wonder in a way that maybe he intentionally took a wrong track right there or knew that there was, you know, he had the opportunity to maybe trip somebody up. And really, if the first guy through makes an error and then everybody else follows him, it can really, really make things confusing.
Gotcha.
So it could have been an opportunity right there to, you know, maybe 4 kilometers into the stage, he sees the opportunity to, you know, knock Adrian Van Beveren out of the overall lead.
Right, because the waypoints out there, they used to be pretty big, like the radius that you had to hit to register, hey, I'm on the right track, I can proceed on the course. And now it's considerably smaller. It's like,
well, they added a new waypoint, right? Yeah. So a new style waypoint. It's a WPP, so waypoint precise, and it's only 200 meters.
I see. So, yeah, we talked about that in the beginning of the show. Yeah.
And so that's what's tripping these guys up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it looked like there's mass chaos out there. It was just guys circling around everywhere trying to find this waypoint. And I think it looks like maybe one or two guys went up the wrong canyon. Then they're coming back, and it was just, you know, a mess. And I mean, I've been in those situations, and you don't know, you get there and you just, it looks like a bomb went off.
Cause everything was going fine. And then all of a sudden you come over a rise or you come around a corner and there's tracks everywhere and people are actually turning around and you're just like, no, well, I need to find this and get out of here.
Yeah, 4 kilometers into a stage, everybody's still grouped up really tight.
You're still in the dust.
Spread out. So, you know, everybody's just coming off the line and going straight into this, like, I mean, it's not even 4 minutes into the stage. It's like 2 minutes into the stage.
About 3.5 hour race. Yeah.
So very, very interesting. And, you know, I think that the TV images are going to be pretty wild of that if they had the helicopter up in the air.
Yeah, the highlight reel is going to be telling. So you think there is a potential that Toby kind of saw an opportunity here to throw a grenade in the tracks of the race and make it harder than just a straight up navigation challenge today?
I mean, it's very possible. And for sure, he was told that, you know, he needs to let Van Beveren lead out or get him
to the front as much as possible. Yeah.
So whether it was intentional or accidental, but then maybe he took advantage of it. He saw the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But for sure, he had orders to let the Yamaha lose time.
Right. Give him as much opportunity to bleed time as much as possible. Looks like on live timing that Van Beveren also struggled there. Like he was turning around. He wasn't moving for a while. And then as soon as, you know, his teammate shows up, Andrew Short, in the tracking, you can see them almost link up, almost take off together, or at least kind of, maybe they waved at each other and like, follow me, I know where I'm going. And he took off.
It's a stressful situation. And I think, you know, that if you're leading the rally overall and you're seeing your race unravel, if you're at a standstill and you can't find a waypoint
in 2 miles, sure,
yeah, it's super stressful. And, you know, you haven't even gotten warmed up yet. And your rally's basically coming
disappearing
to an end.
Yeah. Before your eyes as you see these guys going in the other direction. Yep. Oh, so, that's stressing me out thinking about being in that position.
For sure. It's a scary position, but you just have to know that everybody else has to deal with the same thing. And, you know, some guys are going to get through it better and some guys are going to, you know, really struggle.
There's some people that took advantage of that, I think, really well. Matthias Wachner is one of those guys. He was in fourth on the day, started 26th. He ran as high as first right after that, like through that zone, and then he dropped down a little bit during the day.
I think Matthias didn't really have the day that he needed to have to be able to win the rally. Maybe he held up and gave away a little bit too much time yesterday.
Yeah, you mentioned that yesterday.
And, you know, he finished fourth and he was about almost 5 minutes behind Sunderland. Mm-hmm. So he gave up another 5 minutes on the lead of the rally today, and it leaves him basically without a major mistake, the overall win is basically out of reach for him tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Ricky Brabec started in 15th and finished fifth today. Didn't seem to get as hung up as other people did right out of the gate. And then his teammate Pablo Quintanilla, sixth on the day, starting in 10th. So looks like Pablo rode a pretty smart race. Probably wanted to make up some more time again after the day yesterday as well.
Yeah, I mean, Quintanilla, I think he maybe had a tough day today. You know, it needed to be a big day for him again too. I would say going in tomorrow, maybe he's the only one who would have like a miracle outside shot to be able to get the overall lead. But mm-hmm. it's going to be a battle between him and Wachner for the podium for sure.
Yeah. Nacho started in 24th on the Monster Energy Honda. Came in 7th on the day. Yeah, he just kind of climbed up all day. He was way behind the pack. And again, he didn't make up, you know, as much time as Wachner did, and certainly didn't make up as much time as Benavides did. Benavides was flying out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Benavides was motivated and with nothing to lose and,
yeah,
you know, everything to kind of gain.
Right. Very cool day. We had a Dumontier, French rider from the team Dumontier Racing, crack into the top 10 on the overall stage. He started 21st, probably took advantage of some nice track in front of him, but avoided some mistakes. We haven't talked about him at all.
I haven't heard of this guy at all. I didn't even know he was in the race. So it's interesting to see him get a top 10 stage finish.
And very cool. And then right behind him is our first Yamaha on the day, Monster Energy Yamaha Rally Team's Andrew Short. He started 6th today, ended up 9th. So, yeah, he lost some time, expectedly, in that first zone because he was in that top 10 leading out on the day. But he recovered pretty well and, you know, did okay in the top 10.
Yep. So he's right there. And I think we have possibly a chance to get Andrew on the phone as well.
I think we do. Let me try to call Andrew Short because I'm really excited to hear about, man, basically what happened in those first few Ks and then, you know, how the rest of the stage was, because it looked like it was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, hopefully we can get a little insight into that and see if he was able to kind of support his teammate out there.
Yeah, see if they rode together. See if they saw any shenanigans going on, too. I like to get the inside track on these shenanigans. All right, hold on. We're going to call Andrew. Andrew Short. Hey, I got to connect you to our device here. Hold on 1 second.
Jesse forgot to pair his phone.
I thought it was coming through. Can you hear us?
Yeah, sound pretty good.
Perfect.
You sound great. What about me? You sound great.
All right. So, looked like a pretty demanding, kind of physically challenging stage today. A lot of soft dunes and stuff. Can you give us a little kind of recap on the day?
Yeah, it was definitely the most challenging stage, and I think they want this. You know, as a promoter, you want some fireworks for the end, especially if it's going to be close. And man, it was right from the get go at kilometer 4, they had a WPC, and no one found, like when I arrived there, it was full of dust and people going everywhere, and I started 6th bike. So this was crazy. My teammate, he started in front of me, obviously was leading the overall. So that wasn't best way for him to start the stage. But after this, we rode together. It was fun. And we caught the first three guys that clumbed the 300 until the end. And we passed them. They went in a different riverbed. We caught the right one, and then we finished towards the end. But we lost a lot of time. Today was a day that you wanted to start back, and it was definitely tough, like you said. There were some really small dunes that were really soft, and these can cause trouble really quick for the bike and also yourself. They're really, because they're physically demanding. But it was a more fun day, but a stressful day also.
Yeah, I was watching the live tracking last night before I went to bed, and it looked like even Toby out of the gate kind of went backwards on the course trying to find that first waypoint. You said it was at like 4 kilometers, I think. When you got there, there was only five guys in front of you. Like you said, you were sixth bike out. Did it throw you off, or did you just have to navigate through there kind of slow because of all the chaos?
Well, my teammate was freaking out. Mm-hmm. And so at the double danger for 5.3, that beat. So that's what tipped it off for me. But he went like a banshee back, and he was trying to recal. But he didn't really see it. But I went down the road where I got the beat for the 5.3. Mm-hmm. But so that's how we were a kilometer off. We went down the wrong valley.
Okay.
And I was even talking to Stefan Petterhans. He even went the wrong way in the car, with all the bike tracks. So I think numerous people had issues here. I think the car guys had issues here. Mm. And a lot of the tracks that were less visible were really less visible because of the high winds and the rain. And, you know, if you're not paying attention to the cap and the average and all this, and don't catch the right valley at the right time with your auto, then you're in a world of hurt.
So yeah.
It was not the way to start the day, but I don't know. That's how it goes.
Yeah, it really put you guys, the Yamaha team, kind of on their heels a little bit. And then did you guys have any other trouble throughout the day, like in the sand dunes? Were you guys getting stuck at all? We heard from, I think Luciano said he was getting stuck a couple times out there.
Yeah, to be the first bike to go through there, I think those first three, mm-hmm. if you didn't stay on a track, yeah, you just sink. Like, your wheels would just be buried.
Wow.
So we got off the tracks a couple times and quickly learned we needed to be back on. And just because our bikes were overheating, getting stuck, and you don't want to kill the clutch either.
Yeah.
You can lose a lot of time. So, and it was really high winds. Like, you're in these soft dunes and you're getting buried and you can't see. You can barely see in front of you because it's like a sandstorm. Crazy how it works like that, but it's part of it.
Wow.
It's like a real Dakar stage to kind of finish off the rally there, yeah, I just guess. Huh?
Twist the knife into all the competitors.
Yeah, I think they won that way.
So the guys who were out in front, just ahead of you guys, did they kind of pull aside or kind of would you say check up a little bit to try to make Adrian lead or trip him up in any way, or was it just kind of straightforward and everybody getting to the end?
I think the KTM guys could do this, with Toby and Luciano, for Matias and Sam, like they could hit a, they could cause some. But Juwan, he just had to go. He has no choice. He doesn't have that gap to play with. And so maybe the KTM guys could have played games, but I don't think they were. I think they were just trying to go, and it was a really difficult stage to lead out. And just because there's so much sand and so many dunes, and you're just going to get killed on time, and especially with the conditions. So they were up for a difficult task, and there was lots of those riverbeds, the wadis, all over the place, and the averages went really far out, and then they would come back, and you really had to be good at averaging and hoping that it came back the way that you wanted it to. So this was difficult, and this kind of caught them out at the end, and he caught the right riverbed, me and Adrian, and so we saved some time there towards the end. But for sure, the guys coming from the back had some good tracks, and it helps with the confidence. But, if you're trying to make a decision, you see some tracks in front of you, it definitely helps calm your nerves and give you some confidence in the right way.
Yeah, if you go back to yesterday, it seemed like there was some obvious people checking up and hitting the brakes and, you know, kind of forcing that flip so they didn't have to lead out today. Did you see that on the ground when you were racing yesterday?
I was with those guys. The Honda guys, for sure, with Nacho and Ricky, they missed the WTC. I think a lot of people missed this. It was behind a mountain, which was really difficult to catch. Even if you were close and you're on the road book, you almost had to go off the road book to catch it. And 200 meters is a lot smaller. It used to be 300, now the 200.
Right.
This makes a difference. So I think majority of those two, their time loss was there, and that worked in their favor. Mm-hmm. But Matias, he pulled a quick one. I think he played too much the game and sat too long, but it's hard when, you know, people coming back. Even if you, quote-unquote, could pull over and check your phone for the time gap, you really don't know. Sam mm-hmm. played it right, but I never saw Matias. I saw there was still some tracks in front of me, but the tracks always split. You don't know, you know, if he's where or if it comes back together. And so obviously he pulled a quick one there at the end. Pablo was behind me. He passed me, and then I passed him back. And then towards the end, he just stopped as well. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It obviously was a good decision for a couple of them. I think Matias went a little too deep and lost too much time, and I think he was in the dust with some slower guys today. But you just don't know. It's a bit of a gamble. Mm-hmm. And me and my teammate, we thought we were starting up front. We would lose time naturally, and we didn't know. You can't control who's going to play a game. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of how racing is, and you have to adapt and read the race as it's going on, and sometimes things are out of control. So
yeah.
But I think we did what we could, and we had to use our strengths because some of our, I think we have to rely more on navigation and some other things than rather just pure speed.
Yeah. Right. Going in tomorrow, do you see any time available in that short stage to make up and get maybe Adrian back into the top contention of the race, or is he, you know, a little bit out of contention, do you think, for the overall, if nobody has a catastrophic problem in front of them, just on racing alone and distance, do you think there's enough time?
No, honestly, I don't know if something crazy happened, which I don't foresee happening.
Yeah.
Classically, or typically, it's more just
ceremonial.
Pretty straightforward on the last day. Who knows? Yeah, ceremonial, whatever. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean,
there was rumors that it was all flooded. There's only going to be 20 kilometers, but I guess they just confirmed that the whole 60 kilometers is on.
Mm. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, we've seen a couple engine failures and some different things. So,
somebody in the front could happen.
It's always on the table for sure. But it seems like, you know, if you look at history, you know, the final stage has always been a bit of a parade in, and we don't see big changes in the general.
But also the times are closer to normal also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't typically have these time gaps as tight as they are.
Yeah, this race has really kept it a lot tighter. Today was actually the first time we saw somebody lose, you know, more than 10 minutes that's in this top five. I mean, Adrian's sitting at 15 minutes out of the lead now in fourth place. That's the biggest time gap. Those guys have been within 5 minutes for the whole race, at least the last half of the race.
Yeah.
Two Yamahas in the top 10, general classification. Looks like you guys are, you know, probably going to stick there. Huge success compared to last year when none of the bikes made it to this point. And how's the morale in the team, and how's everybody feeling? Obviously, they're probably bummed about today, but generally, how has the Yamaha experience been this year?
Yeah, I think the big goal was to get to the finish line, and we're not there yet, and you don't want to jinx yourself and all those mm-hmm. and all that. So, like, this year's been really positive. The team's worked really hard. And we're all supposed to be here and be a part of the race. It's a massive race and a really cool life experience. And just to be here and with this group has been a lot of fun. And a cool group of people. So hopefully we can finish strong and get there and achieve that goal. And yeah, today was a bit of a disappointment for Adrian, I think, because he's had so much success up to this point.
Yeah.
And today was the tipping point of how the direction of the race is going to go. But also, this is racing, and you can't have any regrets, and he did his best, and he did a good job for the position that he was in, mm-hmm. In my opinion. So I think he should be proud, and it's not over. And I think you just got to do your best until the end and assess kind of what happened and be, you know, comfortable that, you know, you did everything that you could.
Cool. Well, we're going to be watching like hawks over here for that final stage and see if that Yamaha can sneak into that podium.
Yeah.
See if Andrew's short.
What do you watch on the app? Or?
Yeah, we just watch the app.
Everything we
watch
the can, yeah.
Live timing on the app and social media to see if anybody posts anything fun.
That's cool. Awesome.
That's cool. Until you give us a live camera feed of the race with commentary, that's the best we can do.
Yeah.
From your phone.
Yeah. Yep.
Right on. Cool, Andrew. Well, you know, I'm sure you're looking forward to getting some rest after this thing's wrapped up and getting home to your family. So, you know, let's get through tomorrow and get you back.
Yeah, hopefully we can make it to the finish. I'm sure you know how that is, Glenn, and see how it goes. It's been a fun race, but yeah, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and some things about home sounds good right about now.
Yeah, all right. Well, sure. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Good luck
thanks,
tomorrow.
Guys. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Yep. Have a good night. Bye.
Thanks again, Andrew, for calling us. Cool insight.
Yeah, it's awesome. Gives you an idea of really
how crazy,
how gnarly it was out there.
Yeah, that first 5K, like he said, he was 5.3K. Mm-hmm. So he was a kilometer away the wrong direction.
So basically,
and had to find back.
What he was saying there was there was a triple danger ditch at 5.3,
which is an audible alarm that shows up.
Yeah, it gives them a buzz on their GPS. So that was how he confirmed that he was on the right track, was that he heard the buzz from, or the beep from the triple danger at 5.3. So he was able to confirm that he was on the correct track, and maybe the other guys didn't notice that, or they thought it was the waypoint. So, you know, a little bit of kind of, you know, it shows some of their training is paying off when they get into that situation where things are not confusing. Adding up and this and that. So he was able to use that to confirm and know that he was, you know, headed the right direction.
Yeah. That might've been the point that Adrian decided to latch on and chase him down. Maybe if he could see him at that point, but it sounds like they rode together. And did as best they could, but yeah, really that time bled away in the first 5 miles of the race that Adrian lost today. Yep. He couldn't really get it back.
No. And I think after that chaos in the beginning, then it was just an out and out race and every man for themselves kind of thing. And
yeah.
It seemed like there was a whole lot of strategy or team tactics after that, because the race was basically blown wide open at that point.
Yeah. Other notable guys out there. So yeah, if we go down the list, Svitko was in 10th, started in 7th. He had a solid ride.
Finished just behind Andrew Short. So it was good. And then our American boy, Mason Klein.
A rookie sensation, Mason Klein.
Right 11th up there in
today. 11th.
Yeah.
And he started 13th, so he climbed a little bit.
Yeah, I was messaging with Mason a little bit, and he wasn't super happy with his performance today. I think he's, you know, he's probably tired, and, you know, he really, really is motivated and wants a top 10 finish. And so he's right on the bubble there in the general, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I think there's only a few seconds that separate or kind of that are keeping him out of the top 10 in the general. So, I think in his mind, he's really has to race all the way to the finish if he wants that top 10. Mm-hmm.
And if he gets that top 10, then he's automatically placed in Rally GP, you know, the premier class for next year, correct?
Yeah. Yep. So, you know,
which is his goal.
The Rally GP class again is a new class. He's currently in Rally 2, which is more of like the, you know, for the younger guys and
the up and coming racers
guys. And then the Rally GP is kind of the an elite class.
Right.
So he really wants to get into that elite class. And I think that gives him a better opportunity for, you know, signing with a factory team or getting a ride for next year, because, you know, nothing's guaranteed with Dakar. I mean, I know him and his family invested a lot of money and
time.
A lot of people have donated money and sponsors, and everybody's kind of rallied together to get him there. So there's no guarantee he's going to be back next year.
No, for sure.
And, you know, it's hard to keep fundraising and spending your own money and doing these things to race a race that's costing you $200,000.
Right. Right. So, yeah. It's not sustainable forever.
No. So he really needs to get some support to be able to continue to race this rally.
Yep. So he's feeling that pressure a little bit going into the final stage, but man, sure. He cannot be disappointed in anything he's done this year.
He's already done such a good job.
Yeah.
He's for sure made a name for himself, and it doesn't matter rally GP or not. It really doesn't matter
what happens now. He's turned some heads and definitely put his mark on this race.
And he's only 20 years old.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of years ahead of him.
Yep. He's got a bright future.
And I know it's tough when you're that age and you think, you know, every race and every day, if you like you miss something, that your career is over and it's never going to be, you're never going to get another chance. And really, you have a lot of years ahead of you.
Yeah, it was fun talking to Skyler about that in our pre-race interview. You know, he mentioned Kurt Caselli teaching him a lot about that. Like, hey, this is a long game. If you're smart, start using your head. You can do really good at this. So Mason's in the same spot, doing great. Good job, Mason, today. Our provisional leader coming into the stage, Adrian Van Beveren on the overall, he finished 15th on the day, but he lost 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, 21 minutes and 45 seconds off of off the overall winner of the day. So that was quite a big time loss. In a way, to be for sure, some time loss was expected because we knew that he was going to end up either leading out or
definitely
struggling.
He had a huge challenge in front of him trying to.
Yeah,
and stage.
He had Walkner and Sunderland perfectly positioned in the back, ready to come out, and basically if they were going to win the race, this was going to be the day that they did it. So.
Yeah, and yesterday decided that.
Yep.
That his fate was to lose some time today. But that much time, as Andrew said, he was upset when Andrew came into him, and you could tell he was panicking out there as he was missing that waypoint.
I know another guy who lost big time today was Joan Barreta. And
right.
Again, he started up front and, I think he got caught up in that little bit of, kilometer four drama.
Mm-hmm.
Barreta finished 25 minutes back.
Yeah.
And he was a podium contender at the beginning of this stage.
Yep. He ended up leading a lot of the day too, I think, out there with Toby Price.
Yeah.
And Luciano and so a bunch of other guys.
Yeah. It sounds like that group had to lead out quite a bit. And, it cost him some time today for sure.
Today's stage seemed to like bleed more time for those front runners, despite the navigation challenge. Even after that, they were probably struggling. Is it because of the dunes and the small dunes and the course and everything like that? That sucked it out of them.
From the looks of it, there was a lot of small dunes. They call them dunettes, and these little dunes are
that reminds
really,
me of a donut, a small donut. Dunettes.
They're the hardest ones to ride for sure. The big dunes, when the dunes form, if they're big, they're usually pretty hard. They have some stability to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the soft ones are the ones you really have to watch out for because they're. Or the small ones, I should say, because the small ones are hard. They don't have enough of, or they're soft because they don't have enough of a base to grow big.
Oh, gotcha.
And sometimes there's some vegetation in between them, and man, there's some really, really soft spots in the little dunes, and you can't really get on top of the sand. You always have to watch for a hole or something in that stuff. So
yeah, they didn't really get big enough to turn into a mountain. They're still just this like curb of sand almost if you look at the photos. And then, one side of that is really soft because the way the wind's blowing the sand over the side of it. And the other side's better, but not great. And they're not big enough to get on top of and get a rhythm or a momentum going.
For sure. Really
basically
hard
running into these parking, speed bumps all day.
They're really hard to read. And again, they'll have holes in them and you just can't see the... And when I say hole, it's a hole... under the sand, so there's sand over the top of it,
see.
And all of a sudden you'll be riding along and just the front end just drops out of nowhere. And
and they had 350 kilometers to race through there today.
Yeah, there's little indicators that you can take to kind of know where these are and be prepared for them at least, but very, very difficult to read those little dunes.
For 3.5 hours navigating and trying to push through there with the pressure of this enormous race on your back and knowing you don't have another day to make up time, knowing that's now or never, trying to maintain your bike. Andrew said their bikes were overheating in the dunes today. Try not to run out of gas. Adrian's quote, you know, a translation in English on the website says, I almost ran out of gas too today. Like all that pressure mounting up for you for 3.5 hours today.
Yep.
The day before the final day, like just they threw it at them today.
I'm really stoked they did that. You know, I think having a tough, gnarly stage at the end, it really kind of finishes it off with some fireworks. And, you know, I hate to see it just kind of, the guys just kind of ride it in and
yeah,
you know, no real serious challenge at the end. So I think they did a really good job with the route this year.
Yeah. It, from the beginning, we had navigation challenges and snafus. We're going to have a wrap up show that's mm-hmm. going to go over all the highlights, but today, do you want to get into the general rankings now since we went through the top competitors?
Yeah, we can do that. I think the only one that we really left off of there was Toby Price, who basically let out the stage. And I think he finished the day in 28th and lost 30 minutes.
Yeah. So
as you can see, that's quite a big gap from starting first to,
yeah,
you know, starting a little bit further back.
In the virtual standings at the first waypoint at 43 kilometers in, he went from first out of the gate to 46th position. So
yep.
There was a lot of time loss. That's the first signal you can tell when there was something bad happening out there.
For sure.
Exciting.
Cool. Well, let's see. Yeah, we might as well get into the general and have a look at our kind of our battle that's shaping up for the overall podium.
Yeah, 2022 Dakar Rally Champions pretty much set up right now.
Yep.
Barring all of those things that can happen in a rally race based on time and the remaining course ahead to race, Sam Sunderland, as he has done a lot this race, is in control.
Yep.
He's been up on top of here. I'm going to check, but I think it might be 7 days he's been in the lead of the race.
He's, you know, led over half the rally. And he's leading when it counts.
Definitely is leading when it counts. And he has the biggest time gap, I think, that he's had all race, at least in the second half of the race. He's leading Pablo Quintanilla on the Monster Energy Honda by 6 minutes and 52 seconds coming into the final stage.
Yeah, and it's a 167-kilometer stage, so just over 100 miles to race tomorrow.
To lose 6 minutes in a 100-mile race is going to be really not likely.
Yeah, and he also has a teammate to lead out for him tomorrow to open the track.
Remember, so Kevin Benavides is going to be in front on that track.
And Quintanilla is starting, I believe, in sixth tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at just the time gaps, it is physically possible that Quintanilla could make up 7 minutes on him. But in 100 miles, I don't see it happening. I think this thing's wrapped up for Sunderland, barring a crash or a mechanical failure or something like that.
Keep in mind, they still have to ride, you know, 500 kilometers on the road tomorrow to and from the special stage back to the finish line. So
for sure,
it's not just a 100-mile ride tomorrow.
No, yeah, I mean, the
if it's you a 400 mile ride
the liaison, yeah, for sure,
yeah, and,
you know, anything can happen. I mean, you could see a transmission failure, engine failure,
tire could like that, rip off the rim and blow up, so
yeah, who knows, but
it's not over.
Yep. And then in second overall, Pablo Quintanilla, Monster Energy Honda rider.
Yep.
Like we said, he's 6 minutes and 52 seconds off the lead, and I'm pretty sure we have a quote from Pablo about his day. Kind of give us a idea of how he ended up there
and how he wanted to end up,
right?
He's happy about his position.
Yeah, was a important day today. Oli was super tough. I think was the toughest stage of the Dakar. A lot of dunes in the beginning, really soft, sometimes difficult to cross it. Yeah, and overall I did a good stage. I just had a small mistake in one WPC. Maybe I lose 2 or 3 minutes. But yeah, it was a tough race. I tried to push all day. And until now, I'm happy with my performance. After the rest day, were doing a super good job every day, catching some minutes with no mistakes. So yeah, I want to thank to all the people in the team. They've been working really hard. These 2 weeks have been really tough for everybody, but yeah, happy, and we still have one more stage in front, 160K, so we need to keep focused, and the race is not over until we cross the finish line.
Thank you, Pablo.
Yeah, so you can hear it in his voice. It was tough stage, he's tired.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a battle for that second place position, because, you know, sitting in third in the general classification, we have Matthias Wagner, and he's just,
18 seconds behind him?
Yeah.
20-some seconds behind him.
Yep. So very, very close between these two, and, you know, they're starting relatively close together tomorrow. So I think Quintanilla is starting a couple minutes behind Wagner. So there's potential there for him to make up some time. But these guys are gonna be racing it to the very end for that for that second place position.
It's gonna be interesting to watch those guys battle
KTM,
it out.
Yeah, KTM for sure wants to go 1-2, or the KTM group, I should say. So gas KTM. And then, you know, they doesn't hurt for them to have a Honda on the podium, just to kind of give them make sure that, as they say, as the bosses say, remind everyone that they were there.
Show everybody we were there.
Yeah.
Wagner, third place right now in striking distance of Quintanilla for that second spot on the podium. It's going to be a good race for second. Quinn thinks first place is out of reach. Me too. I'm going to agree with Quinn. Poor Van Beveren, man. He was looking good all race, in the middle pack, playing it conservative, being consistent. And then today he got hung out to dry. He's 15 minutes and 30 seconds down in fourth place now.
Yeah.
He's certainly out of contention for the lead, barring some triple catastrophe in the front.
And I mean, he's had a great race. And
absolutely.
You can't be upset about that for sure. You know, he's led the rally several times, and he's run up front. He's been super consistent. I think a podium finish at this point is pretty much out of reach for him, but still fourth is a really solid finish. And I think he's pretty safe in that position. I don't think there's anyone behind him that's going to really come up and challenge him tomorrow.
Yeah. So. Especially with his starting position, but he's 7 minutes, 15 seconds out of podium contention.
And he's had a good showing, and you know, there's some rumors that possibly that Yamaha team is not going to be back next year. So, you know, I think he's looking for a ride for next year, and I think his performance this year has really shown that, you know, he can run up front with the boys. So, you know, hopefully one of the other manufacturers, you know, wants to bring him on board and, you know, give him an opportunity on another team.
There have been a few remarks. You've mentioned it a couple times about the Yamaha maybe not having the top speed of the KTMs and not being able to run on them, pure speed aspect. Andrew even mentioned a little bit about it in his quote. It would be interesting if that's the case, if he's being limited by speed on a bike, you know, what the results of this race would have been different, even the stage today, or, you know, a couple of those stages back, if he was on the fastest bike in the field.
Like I was saying though, is that sometimes that being on a fast bike can be a bit of a penalty.
Yeah.
Because if you do have a really strong finish in a stage that's fast, and then you have to lead out the next day, you're going to lose buckets of time.
He did a really good job of avoiding that.
He remained consistent, yeah.
Until the end of the race, and he got stuck there mainly because he had a great day and other guys were like checking up.
Yeah, and he hasn't won a stage this year.
Right.
So of those top three guys, you know, he hasn't won one.
Mm-hmm.
But he's remained consistent. So sometimes I think, you know, having a little bit slower bike, you can ride the thing to the potential, and you're a little bit safer in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think that last year they were probably pretty close as far as top speed and power and everything, and clearly they had some major mechanicals last year. So I think maybe they, in order to be a little safer, maybe they had to detune the bike a little bit, and
built a durable workhorse instead of a rocket ship.
They've done a great job.
Yeah, great success for the Yamaha team this year. You know, they have two guys in the top 10 in the overall general rankings. But between those two Yamahas, we have a trio of Hondas. All of the Hondas are in the top 10, which is fantastic for Honda. You got Beretta, Brabec, and Nacho Cornejo all stacked up in fifth, sixth, and seventh, respectively. And they're out of contention for all intents and purposes. They're 27 minutes back, 37 minutes back, and 41 minutes back. So really still dragging themselves back from that big time loss, but they also lost some more time today. You know, right. We're starting from stage one, big time loss, and then today, you know, some guys dropped some time too. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at that time that was lost on the first stage, mm-hmm. and I mean, you know, an hour, 50 minutes, 40 minutes, this and that, and all of these top, you know, eighth through fifth place all lost a big time there, and it would be a completely different race, really.
Yeah, for sure. A little bit of stuff to think about for going into next year and or the next race, and how those those direction changes, multiple notes and stuff are going to play out in the future.
Yeah. And you can't say, oh, if we erase that time gap, it would be different, because it would be different, but it would be a different race entirely.
Yeah.
Because those guys would be mixing it up in different positions and losing time in different places. And so the race would evolve differently. So,
yeah,
you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, is
coulda, woulda, really shoulda
a thing in rally.
I think, what did Jimmy say? I guess isn't what you want to do. I got lucky, and I think, and I'm going to guess. Those are not things you want to hear about when you're racing a rally. Yeah. That can only work like maybe once in a while in a rally race.
Yep.
Andrew Short in eighth place behind that, you know, big wave of Hondas on the Yamaha. He's 43 minutes behind. Yep. Top 10 position for Andrew Short in the overall ranking seems very, very solidified. And then Mason Klein, ninth place right now. So he's in a good spot to move up
for the rookie, and you know he's looking really good. He's had a great rally so far, and you know just behind him is Toby Price. He's sitting basically just over a minute back.
Yeah, minute 20. Mason just posted something funny on Instagram. He says that, you know, he's in the top 10. It's going to be between him and Toby Price for the top 10. And it's fun that he actually gets to say that, number one. But also he said, Toby's done this before, so he thinks he should let the young guy have it this time. He's looking for some help from Toby for that top 10 position.
Huh? Right? I think Mason's pretty solid for a top 10 finish tomorrow. You know, even if Toby passes him up, he's still got a little bit of time on Svitko, and you know, so if he finishes 10th, that's a pretty well done job. And you know, the other thing is, you look at, is he made it through his first Dakar without any penalties,
right?
So I mean, it's so hard to just to make it through Dakar clean without any speeding penalties or anything like this, and so it's very impressive that he's had a relatively clean race, you know, only really one get off. And you know, it's, I think he's blown up, probably used more of those airbag canisters than the team expected.
It sounds like it, yeah.
He's kept it on two wheels for the most part.
Yeah, he's the story for the younger generation, somebody that I think the organizers are probably really happy is there, so that they can inspire some younger racers out there to look at rally a little earlier in their career, like Zach Osborne was saying on our show. He was really excited that, you know, here's a 20-year-old that decided he wanted to race rally before he had a career in professional off-road, instead of the other way around, which most people do it.
Yep. Yeah, this is really a first that I know of. I mean, every former champion and former, you know, factory rally racer has had a career in either enduro or motocross or desert racing, and
or both.
Yeah,
or all three.
So yeah, it's, you know, I didn't know what to expect from him, because he didn't really have a super solid base in any one discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, he was kind of coming into it raw. So, you know, it really impressed me.
I'm impressed. Yeah. I'm not surprised Sunderland is sitting on the top of the standings right now.
Yeah. And
I saw him sitting in control a lot. Obviously, you know, there's a lot that can go on between earlier in the race when he was in the lead already and he was saying, hey, being in the lead doesn't matter right now. But if you're constantly there day after day or every 3 days, you're still in the lead. And when you lose time, you're still in fourth place. And then you're in the lead again. You lose time, you're in fifth place. Then you're in the lead again. Like, you're just doing right stuff every day. You're not getting stuck on these waypoints that are quote unquote, I don't think it's in the right spot in the road book. Well, it is, but like he's just been missing all those pitfalls.
And everything's been going his way.
Absolutely.
And to win a Dakar, everything just has to kind of fall into place and go your way.
It's almost impossible.
It reminds me of, I believe it was 2017 when he won the last time. It was mm-hmm. very similar situation. It
right.
was like he was in the right spot at the right time. I mean, you make your own luck. You put yourself in that spot.
Yes, for sure.
But if you set yourself up, you put yourself in the right spot, things start to fall into place. And that's what's happened with him this year.
How many decisions has he made while he's riding and have happened out there that has put him in this position over the last, I mean, we're talking almost 40 hours of racing. He's had to put his foot in the right spot, knowingly or not, that it was going to have that outcome.
Yeah, every minute of every day. It's what you wake up and have for breakfast, and every decision you make puts you in that spot. So
it's the coolest part about this race. And Ricky talked about letting those little decisions, when they don't work out, keeping them out of your mind so they don't snowball into a big problem. And mm-hmm. Sam, I'm sure, had some of those moments come up that caused him panic or caused him anxiety or caused him to lose time. And for whatever it is, he just kept it rolling in the right direction and not letting it affect him.
Yeah, he was caught up in that thing on the first day too. And mm-hmm. I think he just was able to get through there a little bit cleaner, and things fell into place for him there. And I think that started it.
Right.
So he got through there better than anyone else. And then that put him in a position where he could kind of control the race, continue to make good decisions, and things just fell into place for him.
Man, I can't wait to go back after all this is over and look at these stages again and see this thing replay almost like a rerun of the race, but just looking at the results
for sure
and the time losses
and the statistics
that we can start cranking out of this for our wrap-up show.
Yeah, you know, the other thing to mention here too is just sitting just outside the top 10, we have Svitko and Santolino. So
right,
both of those guys, it looks like, had to take a engine penalty in the last couple of days. So I think Svitko had to change an engine. He got a 15-minute penalty. Santolino on the Sherco, I believe, had to change an engine. So he got also a 15-minute penalty. But you take away those penalties, and that puts them in, you know, fifth and sixth. So yeah. Or sixth and seventh, you know. So,
yeah, you really could shake it up.
That's a couple more guys that would be inside the top 10 had that not happened. So, I mean, this top 10 is so tight.
The depth of the field is insane right now. And we're missing Skylar House. We're missing Daniel Sanders, who was about to, you know, put a stick of dynamite into this race, it seemed like, in the first few days.
We lost Ross Branch.
And Ross Branch, who had plenty of speed to run up front.
Yeah. So,
what-ifs.
The what-ifs, yeah.
The what-ifs are sad because it's the guys, you know, the personalities and the speed and the time shakeups that really could have, you know, been entertaining to watch. But, hey, Sam put himself in the right spot all race.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he deserves this win if he gets through this stage tomorrow. And,
everything is if.
He's worked really hard over the years, and, you know, it's good to see him get one, and hopefully Gas get their first ever Dakar win.
Yeah, be pretty remarkable for that brand to pull out a win. You know, it's part of that big KTM group, but hey, when you split off into another brand and you got different team members and you got to get everything dialed in, it's still pretty remarkable.
All right, well, should we talk about tomorrow's stage?
Tomorrow's stage, we should talk about that.
Oh, and are we giving stuff away? Is that did I hear a rumor about that or what?
We are. We have a big giveaway announcement. Ooh. Climb is stepping up because they love us so much and they love you guys for listening to us, that we're going to give away $1,000 Climb gift card that you can buy anything you want at Climb. And how you win it is easy.
Can I win?
You cannot win.
I need a pair of those heated gloves.
No, you have to buy your own gloves.
I could get a couple pairs of those for $1,000.
You could. You could have one for every day of the week.
That's awesome. Climb rules.
Climb rules. So $1,000 climb gift card. We're going to post the...
We're posting something
on
Instagram.
That you're going to want to pay attention to.
You got to keep your eye out.
Yeah. Go to Dakar Rally Daily on Instagram. It's Dakar_Rally_Daily on Instagram. You can also follow Climb Motorcycle on Instagram. They're going to post it there too. You can follow Cycle News on Instagram. They're going to post it. You can follow Quinn Cody on Instagram. You can follow me. I'm Chasing Trail on Instagram. You can just follow everybody in the whole world on Instagram, and you're going to find out the details to win this $1,000 climb gift card.
Yep. Dakar Rally Daily.
It's going to be fun. So. It's going to be maybe caption contest. Yeah. We might want you to tag some of your buddies that you know would get lost in a rally stage.
Yep. And this is going to have to happen pretty quick. I mean, we're probably going to have to give this away tomorrow. So yeah,
Give it away by the end of the week. I think we'll give it away on Friday. Maybe Saturday we'll give it away.
Crank this out. Yeah. Well, I'm not doing a show on Saturday, so... We're going to have to give it away. Yeah. We'll give it away one way or another.
Yeah. It's coming.
$1,000 gift card from
Climb. We're giving away $1,000 from Climb Money.
Awesome.
Or if you guys don't want to win it, I'll just keep it and I'll buy something cool for me.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, we'll get in tomorrow's final stage of the 2022 Dakar Rally.
516 kilometer liaison.
That sounds wonderful.
Isha to Jeddah.
Back to Jeddah, where this whole show started.
Yep, big giant loop, 164 kilometer special. Looks like mostly dirt, so it's probably going to be on some hard pack, maybe a little bit of sand.
Maybe a little rocky.
It's rocky, pretty doubtful that there will be major navigation or anything like that. I'd imagine it's set up for TV and just kind of a ceremonial finish, but still, these guys, they got to race their bikes together, they got to keep their heads together and get the thing to the finish.
That's going to be a long day, no matter what happens on the bike.
Yep.
And who's leading out tomorrow? Kevin Benavides.
Yeah, Benavides. Sunderland's going out second.
They're going to be very, very cautious and careful out there for sure.
Yeah.
Then you got Joachim in third behind him, then Wachner on the KTM, then you got Brabec, Quintanilla, and Nacho all chasing him down. Really, the only one that has a shot to knock him off is Quintanilla. It's going to be a big job to do that.
Yeah, in my mind, it's not going to happen unless Sunderland has a major meltdown or mechanical failure.
Right.
But Quintanilla and Wachner, that's going to be a battle.
That's the race.
I'm looking forward. For second I'm looking place. Forward to that. To
see who's going to battle it out?
Can put that 4 seconds or 28 seconds on Quintanilla tomorrow.
That's a gap that's attainable.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Well, do you think he's going to do it?
I think Wachner's going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to figure it out. So.
Well, I'm not going to make a prediction.
All right. Who do you think is going to win tomorrow? You want to do one last call out.
Win the stage tomorrow?
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know.
I'm going for Mason Klein.
Yeah.
Let's say the rookie's going to uncork it on the last day and get himself a stage win.
Mason starting in
ninth.
Is he starting in ninth tomorrow too?
Sorry. He's not starting in ninth. He's starting
11th. You weren't 11th. That far off.
Yeah. He's ninth in the general.
Yep. Starting in 11th. He could do that. He could get his first stage win on the final day. That would be a great cap to his race. I'm going to vote for him too. Because I'm pulling for him. We're going to give him all the energy of the universe we can muster.
Awesome. All right.
Thanks, Andrew Short, for calling in. Quinn's got to go to work. I'm going to go to work too. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Climb, for supporting the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show. Thanks to Moto Minded and Rally Navigator for presenting our show. Thanks to Giant Loop and Double Take Mirror for supporting us. We're pumped you're here. And we're going to be talking to you tomorrow from the final stage of the race. Later.